Speak with power, lead with presence, build your confidence. Meet Central Florida's charisma coach. Welcome to the Mary Gardner Show. Now, here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Mary Gardner Show, where we elevate leaders, amplify voices, and help you step into your next level of influence. Today, we're talking about something that every one of us feels. Whether we say it out loud or not, we are living in a time of pressure. Pressure in leadership, pressure in families, pressure in culture, and even pressure in our own minds. And the question is not if you will face a crisis. The question is, who do you become when you do? Because crisis has a way of revealing everything. It reveals your character. It reveals your clarity. It reveals your leadership and how you react. Or do you lead? Do you get pulled up into the noise? Or do you rise above the fray? Today's guest lives at that intersection. He has led at the highest levels of education, including as president of Ave Maria University. Now he leads a fast-growing classical homeschool hybrid movement through Regina Chaley Academy, and he is deeply focused on what it means to lead with conviction, clarity, and calm in the middle of uncertainty. Today we're going to talk about leadership under pressure and how to stay grounded when everything around you is shaking and how to lead in a way that people trust, especially when it matters most. This is a conversation for leaders, parents, and executives, and anyone who wants to rise instead of react. So let's get to it. My guest today is Chris Ice, and he's had a multitude of experiences in multiple industries, including insurance, higher education, hospice, nonprofit, and consultation. And they have helped him fine-tune a leadership style that gets results, empowers people, and goes beyond the bottom line to bring record ROIs to every organization. Chris, thank you for being in studio with us today. Good to see you. How are you?
Oh, great. Thank you for having me, Mary. This is awesome.
It's so good to see you. You have a very fascinating background. And, you know, I know that you were the son of a mailman and you had a very simple upbringing in Lawrence, Kansas, the home of KU, Kansas. I know you're a big Kansas fan. Take us back, because your humbleness probably does reflect where you came from, but give me an overview of your career really quick so we can then dive in on how you became who you became, who you are today.
Well, Mary, I went to college with the idea of being a baseball coach, and for whatever reason, I got a business degree. And I graduated, and I'm going, what do I do with the business degree if I'm going to be a coach? Because you have to be in education in order to do that in most locations. So long story short, I became an assistant baseball coach at a college, a small college in western Kansas, my alma mater, actually. And then I ended up also working in admissions. So I got into the recruiting game, or sales, if you will. Mm-hmm. That led me to the insurance industry, commercial insurance. Mm-hmm. And I did it for 15 and a half years. I rose up through the ranks. I earned a large number of incentive trips while I was there at the top of your game, and ultimately spent 23 years in the commercial insurance industry.
Yeah.
After that time, I was just feeling God was calling me to something greater. I wanted to be home more with my family. Mm-hmm. And so I stepped back. I went into higher education, or back to it, if you will,
yeah,
and developed a program for a university in Ohio, to where I was the director of Major Gifts. I formed their whole Major Gift fundraising division.
Okay.
And that led me onto the path where eventually I become the president of Ave Maria University.
Yeah, you were president of and CEO of Catholic Charities also.
I was,
just
yes.
A quick, you were almost a professional baseball player also. And I know a lot of athletes become salespeople. Mm-hmm. What is it about athletics that ends up being, like, is it the competitiveness? Why do people that are in sports end up so successful in life?
Well, I think there's discipline that you have to learn as an athlete. Every day you're the one getting up at 5:30, 6 o'clock in the morning,
yep,
because the field or gymnasium isn't ready because somebody else is using it at a particular time. Mm-hmm. Or then you come back in the afternoon. I always made sure in college I had all my classes in the morning.
Oh.
And then by 1 o'clock after I ate lunch, I was on the baseball field and I stayed there till 7, 8 o'clock. Then I'm back, you know, studying in the evening for your classes. So it's a rigorous opportunity, if you will, when you're playing athletics. So that just carries over into your business life.
Yeah.
And I think that's why many of them become successful, because they know how to work hard.
Yes.
And overcome, maybe, yep, if they're not the most talented, they can overcome
they
just
can.
Through their work ethic.
I know to my son, I would say all the time, you're an athlete. you got this. You can figure it out. You're strong. You're capable. You can do this. You're an athlete. That was my mantra.
Yeah.
And it worked. He's very capable now. I know also for a while, you, when you were a young person, almost went into the ministry. You were in the seminary. I have your book, Walking the Leadership Tightrope, How to Balance Career, Family Through the Chaos of Crisis. You were in the seminary to be a priest. How did that come about? And you ended up not doing it because you were called to a family life. But tell me about your seminary days.
Well, I had a strong influence from my grandmother, who she would pick me up and take me to daily mass or as an altar server and for a little Irish priest at the parish. And nobody else would serve, I guess. So she would pick me up and take me to mass every day. But ultimately, I kind of idolized him in that respect. Oh. Not in a bad way, just it was like, wow, he's really revered. And so I felt like I was being called potentially to the priesthood. I went into the high school seminary as a freshman in high school and ultimately graduated. But during that time, the priest I was with was the Oblates of Mary Immaculate in Belleville, Illinois. They really helped me discern that that really wasn't my calling, if you will, and then my own decision. But stepped out and praise God they did, because that you know, ultimately led to me meeting my wife, and then eventually my my seven children.
Yeah, seven kids. That's so amazing that you have seven children. That is just so great. So, well, you've had an incredible career. I want to just take a little side note and go that you've been a strong Catholic your whole life. How has that impacted your career, having Catholic values? I know it's important to you. Share with the audience about that.
Absolutely. My Catholic faith is what has guided me throughout all of my life. And it's a commitment to knowing that you're not in control of everything. And so you walk in faith many times, and you're not sure where the future may lead. But you pray and discern. And in that time, God reveals those moments. I believe that the Holy Spirit has given me guidance on many occasions, going all the way back to the high school seminary, discerning in and then discerning out and deciding that, okay, well, you know, it's through prayer and not just my own personal ambition. You know, I felt like it was a well thought out decision. So prudence comes into play, and you develop virtue, you know. And then even going back to, you talk about discipline as well in my business life, also the seminary was discipline. It was a very regimented, we had no time for free time. It was it was very, you know, school, you know, 7 o'clock the bell went off in the morning, and at 10 o'clock it went off and you were in bed. I mean, it was just and everything in between was regimented. But it was good, because young boys would get in trouble otherwise. They would find mischief.
That's right. That's right. Well, a lot of young boys in today's world are finding their way to the Catholic Church. Do you think it's because of the structure, and you can go to daily mass every single day, either at 8 or 5? And so many young people are looking for that structure. Do you think that's why so many are coming back?
I think people are seeking
the Catholic Church.
I think they're seeking truth, and you know, there could be a big religious discussion about this, but ultimately, I think they're looking for, you know, the tradition of walking their inner faith, and many of them are coming back to, or maybe going into the Catholic Church, seeing they don't want the, you know, the bells and the whistles and some of those type of things. They like the sacred. They like the holy, the holiness of, you know, the discernment of quiet, you know, sacred music, all of that.
I like that.
And I've seen so many of them.
Yeah.
I think I read somewhere where, well, just the Diocese of Orlando, for example, had over 900 young people, not just young people, coming to the Catholic Church over this past Easter vigil.
Wow, so, that's really remarkable. Yeah. That's amazing. Well, I love hearing that, and I do love the Mass for that. You go in and it's quiet. I know that I've been in Protestant churches, and you get great lessons for sure, great pastors and great messages. There's nothing wrong at all. It's really a preference, but I do enjoy the holiness of the Catholic Mass. I wanted to go back over to the leadership. We just have a couple of minutes before the break. But you wrote a book. Can you give me an idea of what your book is? It's called Walking the Leadership Tightrope, How to Balance Career and Family Through the Chaos of Crisis. Christopher P. Ice, tell me about your book.
Well, Mary, it was a it was almost a labor of love in the respect of a healing moment for me when I wrote this book. But basically, it was an opportunity. People are asking me, how did you lead through some of the challenging times in your life? And I know we'll get into that here in a little bit. But ultimately, I kept being called and asked these questions. I just started writing it down, thinking through it. And this is my opportunity to really put it down in writing and help others, if you will, to How do you do that when you have a tsunami mm-hmm. of things coming yeah. at you at one time mm-hmm. and you're running an organization or mm-hmm. just trying to run your family, mm-hmm. those type of things?
Yeah.
And how do you balance those type of things? Mm-hmm. And so that was what I got into in this book. It's kind of my life history a little
bit. Okay, yeah.
And then it moves on into working into how that yeah. evolved into even my business life and all that, working it all together.
I read the book. It was really good. It reminded me of another sales book, All You Can Do Is All You Can Do, All You Can Do Is Enough by A.L. Williams. And this has so many nuggets in it for your life just to keep going. And it seems like right now we're in such a culture where people are keeling over and so many people are on the anti-anxiety drugs and medications mm-hmm. and just falling apart. And so I know that you go to daily mass. Tell me about why daily mass is something that can keep somebody in a good place every single day.
When you start your day out with the faith, that's mine. When mm-hmm. you start your day out with focusing on God, mm-hmm. that's what helps get me through the day. Everything else seems less important. Mm-hmm. And so when I can go and I can yeah. receive the Eucharist within the church, mm-hmm. The Catholic Church, as we believe, and I it just helps me focus on Christ, get my day oriented in the mm-hmm. right direction, mm-hmm. and I can now move forward in a steady pace to be able to make my day great, if you will. So
I saw you're always in a great mood. That's so nice to hear. I appreciate that. We're talking to Chris Ice, who is the author of Walking the Leadership Tightrope, How to Balance Career and Family Through the Chaos of Crisis. He's now CEO of the Hybrid Classical Catholic Homeschool Academy called Regina Chaley Academy. We're going to take a quick break and listen to our fabulous sponsors, and we're going to be back. We're going to be talking about emotional discipline and cultural chaos. So be right with us here in just a few minutes, and we'll be back with Chris Ice.
Let's unlock the communicator and the leader that you always wanted to be. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. Now let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Mary Gardner Show. I am sitting here in the studio today with Chris Ice. He is the author of Walking the Leadership Tightrope, How to Balance Career, Family, and Through the Chaos of Crisis. So we were talking about the book and all the leader or the lessons that you learned. What does the leadership tightrope really mean?
Well, when you're Mary, when you're in a leadership position, you'll understand uh-huh. in a big way. I mean, I know you do specifically. You've been there, but there's so many challenges that come at you. So people aspire to be, yeah. you know, the president or the top of their particular,
and they have no idea how much work it actually takes.
Yeah, absolutely, and especially those that maybe work for them. They don't mm-hmm. necessarily see all the pressures that come at them.
No, it's crazy.
In any one day, I remember as a president of the university, I had mm-hmm. 16 different. Departments that mm-hmm. I was overseeing at one time. Mm-hmm. And at any point in time, they mm-hmm. would all be coming to me with a question. You know, mm-hmm. and once your decision now, it's never yeah. too early, right? And so so you try to do your best mm-hmm. at mm-hmm. Pushing it back, if you mm-hmm. will, not in a bad way, just mm-hmm. helping, affirming them that their decisions are good. And that's why you have them in leadership positions.
So you're coaching the coach, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. But ultimately, you know, then you've got, you know, then you get that phone call when you're in your workday mode and, hey, Dad, the dog's sick. What do we do?
Oh, no.
You know, those type of things that happen.
Yeah, that's not good.
And people don't necessarily see those, and you can't really talk about those. So balancing all of that with, you know, the challenges, even maybe your own personal illness at times where you're not sharing a lot of those details mm-hmm. with people. So there are times it can be a real challenge, and that's how you're walking that tightrope all the time. And then you have, in big leadership positions, you have a board that you have to report to. And all they expect is results.
That's really tough. It is. And I know that a lot of people don't often ask how the leader is doing.
Rarely.
And because they expect you, because, you know, leaders do handle everything. All the leaders, because I coach leaders, and it's very, they're humble about it. Almost every one of them, they're humble about it. But they would acknowledge, you're right, nobody pays attention to me. You know, they come to me. But what is the biggest mistake you think that leaders make in a crisis?
The biggest, not making a decision soon enough. Mm. When you're in a crisis, people look to you to make decisions. Mm-hmm. Even if it's wrong, mm-hmm. it's okay. You can get through it. Okay, so they just want a decision.
Okay.
I remember back during COVID mm-hmm. at Ave Maria University, people mm-hmm. were calling me every day.
Okay.
And wondering, hey, are we going to stay open? Are we going to do this? And every day, it was a decision. Nope, we're staying open today.
Ooh.
And I kept the campus open through all of the COVID. I didn't require a mask. I kept, distanced. We did some things that we needed to do. But ultimately, and then parents are saying, are you going to have graduation? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. And it was just that constant affirmation. Mm-hmm. But if I said no the next day, you would have had that opportunity to say, here's why.
Yeah.
And you just correct it. So it's not a matter of people are afraid to make decisions at times. You can't. Yeah. As a leader, people expect you to be there because they're wondering and questioning.
So, but they're going to question if you answer why, or if you just say, here's what we're doing. Do you follow it up and here's why, here's how I made my decision, or do you just say, here's what we're doing?
I think it depends. It depends. Sometimes. So many times, yes, you give them that extra, but some people don't need that. They just need a decision to move forward, especially those that are working for you. They already know the reasons why.
Okay.
So if you give them that decision, yes, move forward, they're ready to go because they've discerned out already. But others may want more, and you have to articulate that.
That's like when you're talking to the media. A lot of the CEOs that I work with, and we put them in front of the media, or they're doing articles, or they're answering questions. You don't tell everything.
Right? You don't have time to either.
Right. You get 2 minutes, you 30 seconds.
Asking President Trump, why are you going to in Iran? Well, there's probably a plethora of reasons.
Oh, yeah. People have no idea.
They have no idea all the background.
We don't have any idea. But. All right. When things get chaotic, what's the first thing a strong leader should do internally?
Be calm, steady, communicate consistently. Overly communicate when you're in a crisis. So when the things are going crazy, you have to be able to keep everybody, calm the best you can. Because they're coming to you and they'll see your steadiness and then they'll calm down.
Okay.
If you get excited, if you get hyper, they feel it. You think about your own household.
Oh, yeah.
If you're leading your family and you know, you get excited about the dog's sick, and you're immediately thinking that the dog's going to die. Everybody's going to think the dog's going to die.
Right.
But if you're calm, say, well, let's just get him to the vet, take a look. I'm sure everything's going to be fine. Everybody calms down.
Yeah.
And 9 times out of 10,
you're not going to get the worst thing.
Right.
So how do you stay calm when everyone else is reacting emotionally?
Well, that goes to my faith.
Okay.
I stay focused on the prize or the end result, the ultimate vision of what's going on. So, but ultimately, in your faith walk, my focus is on Christ, and I know that He's going to get me through everything. Whenever I'm in a challenging time, He will, and no matter what, it's going to be okay.
Yeah,
we're going to be okay. So, experience plays into that a little bit. So, prudence and patience.
Yes,
and knowing that, hey, I've been through this before.
Yeah,
I'm going to get through it again. And those that haven't been through will look to you to lead them through that same experience.
Oh, it's beautiful. So I'm taking away that really leadership is less about control and more about composure and clarity.
Well, there's no question. When you try to control things, people feel that and it feels like a pressure moment.
Yeah. There's a lot of pressure moments right now. I mean, we're constantly pulled into reaction with social media, politics, division. How do you recommend or tell a leader to stay above the fray without becoming disengaged? Like, how do you not just react to everything, political, social? How do you do that as a leader when everybody else is reacting?
Well, what I try to do is talk to my leaders and empower them to make decisions without having to come to me all the time. And so I intercept them. So if people come to you in a matter of chaos to give you time to think about it a little more, you empower those around you to say, have you talked to this particular leader? Have you done this or done that? And direct them in the right direction. Or push them in the right direction to where you're now not, or where you're not being under pressure to make that decision at that particular moment. Because sometimes you might undermine your staff if you get overreactive. Yeah. And you don't want to do that.
Right.
Depending on the size of the organization.
Yeah.
But the smaller you are, the more you have to make those decisions.
Right. There's just so many, so many plates to be juggling all the time when you're in that position. You are talking, also about emotional discipline, which I think is a really great technique for all of us now when we're in such a chaotic place. And I've met so many people along the way who are out of control and they have no emotional control at all about what's happening in culture. And it seems like everybody, because we have access to social media, they care about everything. They do care about the 50 different issues and causes that are in the media that day. They care about everything. And it seems like it's taking people off their game. How do you tell people, what advice do you give people? Like those things, you do have to have faith, even if they're not a believer. What's the advice to people that are so reactive? It's destroying their life.
get off social media and read a good book like Walking the Leadership Tightrope.
Oh, I love it. I love it. Walking the Leadership Tightrope by Chris Ice.
That's but exactly. I mean, you know, get into some of the classics. I mean, read the Bible. I mean, some other things, because the social media, most of it is sensationalized anyway. Mm-hmm. Even the best of the news resources, if they just create anxiety moments. Yeah. The Weather Channel. I mean, that can drive you crazy.
Oh, my gosh. I love the Weather Channel. I love those hurricanes they show. Exactly. And Shark Week is great. I love
it. You sit there and you get all worked up. And it's like, I can't control what's going on.
That's right.
And so reading a good book, read Homer and the Odyssey once again.
Oh,
if you never read it, that's a great read. If you've read it, read it again. You get something new out of it each time.
I love that. We're going to talk about the classics here in just a few minutes. But how do you lead people who are anxious? Because I know a lot of companies right now, people are dealing with a lot. And so maybe they can't show up fully out at work. Maybe they've got a kid in crisis. Mm-hmm. How do you have compassion, but also still structure and still lead and encourage that they still have a job?
Listen to their concerns. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily respond at the moment. I'll get back to you. Mm-hmm. It's going to be okay. Assure them that we'll get through this together. Mm-hmm. Those type of situations. You know, you may not have all the right answers, but again, relying on that things are going to be okay and being assured of that, you'll get through it. Even the worst case scenario, you're going to get through it. God led Moses out of the desert, right? And they're standing at the water and they're wondering, what are we going to do? And lo and behold, he parts the water.
Amen. Right? That's a good story. I like that.
The Egyptians are coming. Right. What's going on? Here comes a fire pillar. We're going to stop them.
Isn't that funny? Yeah. Because doesn't God do it like at the last minute? And they were standing at the edge and then, you know, they were almost run over and all of a sudden it parts. Right. It was just, so that does kind of take place in our life too. You know, last minute, we got to have that faith all the way until it happens.
Yeah, you read through scripture, you see it all the time. And even the Christ is on the crucifix, the cross, and they're all going, he's dead, it's over, you know. And it was actually a victory in it, you know. So we just have to remember that God has been through the worst of times. We aren't going to go anything probably near as challenging as what they went through.
That the truth? Yeah. Is what role do you think that faith and conviction do play in staying grounded? How does somebody who doesn't have faith, how do they do it?
You know, I question sometimes how they do it, because you rely on yourself.
Yeah.
And I know how I am such a meek human being at times and not able to do things. If I rely on myself, I can see I'd be a miserable failure.
Mm.
And so relying on God to be able to take care of things, releasing some of those stresses.
Be still and know that I am God.
Amen.
We've got to keep reminding ourselves of that, because we can't, like you said just a few minutes ago, we can't control everything. And I think when you do open yourself up to social media, it's like the Bible does talk about guard your heart, for out of the wellspring of life comes, you know, and I can't remember that exact scripture. It's in the Psalms, I think. But we really do need to protect our hearts and our minds. And we're pummeled and just bombarded with messages nonstop. And you want to make sure, I think all of us want to make sure that we're listening to good things, to positive things, because if good things go in, good things will come out.
Amen to that.
So, again, we're talking to Chris Ice today, who is the author of Walking.
This is fun, Mary.
I know. We're having a good time. Walking the Leadership Tightrope, How to Balance Career and Family Through the Chaos of Crisis. We're going to take a quick break to listen to our amazing sponsors, and we'll be back talking about Chris and his education and how we're going to be dealing with education in the future. Lots of change coming up, guys. Make sure that you get your pen. There's going to be some good data coming up. All right. I'm Mary Gardner, and we're on The Mary Gardner Show, and we'll be right back after a note from our sponsors.
You're not starting over, you're rising higher. Welcome back to The Mary Gardner Show. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody, welcome back. It's The Mary Gardner Show, and we are talking today to Chris Ice. He is the author of Walking the Leadership Tightrope, and we have been talking stress under pressure. And so I want to hear a little bit more, Chris, about what's going on with education. Like, we know during COVID,
people learned what was happening in the school systems. And we saw with our own eyes the terrible things that the kids were learning and the books that they were reading. And it was perverted and it was so incredibly awful in a lot of ways that parents finally stood up. I know that you are president of Regina Chaley Academy. You don't have one here in Orlando, but I believe you have like 25 around the country and also abroad. Tell us about what is Regina Chaley, what are they for, and tell me about that industry and how education is changing in the world today.
Let me start with that first, Mary, the little bit of the data and statistics. Back in 2024, the Learning Council did a research study of students within the public school system. And within that research, they said that 16 million kids are going to be exiting the public schools by the year 2030, of which 50% will be in private school at that time. Of that percentage, 30% overall will be homeschool.
Oh, that's huge.
That is huge. So you think about half of them are going to be out of the public school system. There's a huge need and a void to fill.
Right.
But you know, parenthetically, why are people leaving? Why? Because they're not getting what they need in education. They're seeing what it's doing to their children. And so when you think about a classical education and what that brings, we're talking about a holistic view of an individual. We're focused on virtue. We're focused on, you know, reading the classics. In Regina Chaley, for example, and I'll get into more detail in a bit, but we don't have screens in the classroom.
Oh, that's a change.
No phones, right?
Wow.
And we are able to focus on you know, the learning, right? The students, we use a Socratic method, which means the teachers sit and have conversations like you and I are having right here.
It's fun, isn't it?
It is.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Right, there's no social media. We're not on the laptops. We're not doing this
type of things.
Yeah, because
in traditional education, be quiet, no talking. Just sit here and memorize and here, you know, take a test.
Yeah, and you think about a young boy who's in first or second grade and they're supposed to sit in a chair and not move around.
That.
Yeah, I mean, you try to strap them in. Those kids want to be active, they're ready to go. They're not, you know, and so classical education allows that, you know, and you get the same, as many people say today, I don't necessarily like the term, but a more rigorous education than you do in the public school system, you know.
Well, that's because there's so many, like one teacher to like 30 students, and if it's a homeschool or hybrid, you've got either a tutor or a mother or a father or whoever's doing the education and one student, or maybe they have seven children like you do, but you know, it's a lot more individual attention. So, and I understand that a lot of the school is teaching people how to be workers. And so the classics are really teaching people how to think.
That's right.
And that's when I've been around those environment, those children, those kids, they are just so much more present, it seems.
Right.
They shake your hand, they look in your eyes, they shake your, you know, ask your name, and they ask questions of about you. I have a girl who I ride horses with. She's 11 years old, and she is more educated in small talk and communication than most adults I know. And so she's a homeschooled daughter. Her mom's a teacher also. So why do you think classical education is so great?
Well, classical, I mean, that's what we used to do. For years, right? Yeah, it goes all the way back to St. Augustine when he was doing classical education. But it's a study of, you know, the trivium, the language, you know, Latin and Greek per se, right? You're also studying the historical context of Western civilization.
Oh.
And those type of things. So it seems like it's, wow, that should be happening anyway. But it's not, because modern education, if you will, or in the regular school system, they're teaching basically toward what the SAT and the ACT want you to do. They're teaching toward a career, for example. So a freshman in high school today, many times we're talking about, okay, where are you going to school? And we got to get you prepared to get your grades up to get to school.
Right.
So it focuses on your grades. It's focused on your college. You know, everywhere you go today, you know, the seniors all have a flag planted in their yard. Hey, my kid's going to you know, such and such school. And, you know, the focus should be on human formation within the individual, because most kids, I mean, I was a college president. Half the kids that came into our college or anywhere, they changed their major by the time they're a junior.
Well, also, students that are graduating from schools right now are being prepared for jobs that won't even be available then.
That's correct.
And so the difference of the classical education or the hybrid is that they're teaching you to think, and you're processing things, you're understanding, you're evaluating, having discussions, what's better for me right right now, which would be better for individuals in today's movement where AI is changing things so dramatically that if you are preparing to teach English in school or be a professor or a teacher, things potentially are just going to be changing and we'll be learning online and all digital videos and things like that. So we have to be able to teach our children how to think, I think. But what do you think parents are missing when it comes to forming leaders in their children?
Well, Mary, go on top of that. So you're referring to what the public school system, just regular education, let's mm-hmm. just put that category in play. Mm-hmm. They are teaching toward a career.
Yes.
What about the rest of the person? The individual, mm-hmm. they're going to be potentially a husband or a wife, right? They're going to get married. They're going to have kids. There'll mm-hmm. be a family, a father, a mother, mm-hmm. right? There's a lot more to life than just your career.
Yeah.
And so that human formation element of the classical right. education, like you said, mm-hmm. we're forming all of that in mm-hmm. virtue mm-hmm. and teaching them about, hey, you get to be you can think, like you said, and mm-hmm. think about, well, this is maybe what I want to do. I want to be a vocational. There's some great electricians out there. Mm-hmm. We need more electricians.
Yeah. A lot of the trades are doing
trades,
so well.
Yes.
Yeah. Last week I had
you don't need a college education, but they'll pay an electrician $200,000 a year. That's what they can earn.
Yeah.
That's a really good living.
That is a good living. Yeah. That is good living if you are electrically inclined or
Absolutely.
Engineering inclined.
Right.
I had an author on last week, Kevin McCarthy, talking about purpose. Mm-hmm. It sounds like a classical education or even private school, but more so a classical education would help a student identify what is their purpose in life.
That's
because
correct.
It allows for conversations of the morality of the person, the whole person, the character,
right.
all those kind of things. So it sounds like leadership where a person would be able to understand their talents and all that
right.
versus education where everybody's learning the exact same thing, exact same time, and everyone's competing, but not everybody has the same competencies, desire, or passion to learn those things.
Right.
So it does make sense. It's not as cookie cutter. So if a person can't afford to go to an outside school, I think that's so important. I'm so glad we're getting this information across to let people know how important it is.
And Mary, let me elaborate a little bit on the, because you keep mentioning the hybrids. I want to elaborate on that a little bit. So what Regina Chaley does, we are in 25 locations across 17 states. We have an international affiliate in the UK.
Mm-hmm.
Our demand is huge. We're getting calls all the time, every week from places across the world. Mm-hmm. I just had one from Portugal here a couple of weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
But within that, we have 2 days in the classroom and 3 days at home. Realizing that parents are the primary educators.
Mm.
So we bring them into the center. We teach them, give them the curriculum, the assignments, and go through. We have the Socratic method. And then we send them home and the parents complete the studies with their children.
Mm-hmm.
And they get the community. They get the rigorous curriculum, as I like to say.
Mm-hmm.
I like to say we get a vigorous curriculum versus rigorous, full of life and excitement
and
moving around and learning. Now, rigorous, everybody wants to be more rigorous today.
Yeah.
I want to see more vigor
in
education,
like that.
Which is exciting. Have your kid go to school, want to be there.
They want to be excited. Yeah. All right, so one of the criticisms about not going to a traditional school is the lack of social or the lack of opportunity with sports and things like that. How does a private school or a classical school or hybrid homeschool answer that question?
I would say a lot of classical schools, 5 days a week, they have their sports and all that. So we are a little bit different. But there are clubs. I mean, we have the Winter Park Volleyball Club. We got, here locally. There's basketball clubs, baseball, traveling teams.
Mm-hmm.
So many of them can get involved with that. Probably the only exception might be football if they're a big star like that. But I will say that we have Harrison Bucker on our board, so we're trying to figure that part out.
Oh, Kansas City Chiefs.
That's right.
He's a great guy. What a great Catholic man. He's amazing. I know that you also, and your former wife who passed, I'm so sorry, but I know that you guys did homeschool your children. Tell me about when you went to California. And it was, what you were received and how you were received there, then.
Yeah, well, we moved to California in the year 2000. At the time, we had our fourth child, that is going on 7. But when we moved out there, we were told that we needed to register as a homeschool family with the local superintendent to make sure that we weren't truant, if you will. So I called the local superintendent of Ventura County, and he immediately told me that he would have me arrested on Monday if I didn't have my kids in school. This is like Sunday afternoon.
Oh, my.
Or maybe Saturday. I don't remember. But anyway.
Wow.
And he said that homeschooling was not allowed in California.
Oh, my.
That was the time and the era. The 90s were really, I thought we were weird homeschooling. So everybody else definitely thought that. But ultimately, there was a fight against the homeschooling movement at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of reasons why, but I won't get into all those details. But long story short, I was able to call the Homeschool Legal Defense Association, the attorneys that represented all the homeschoolers across the country.
Mm-hmm.
They called the superintendent and the next day, everything was fine, and we went on our way. But it was just a term that you had to use with the superintendent.
I
he was
see.
Playing on that. But it was like a draconian type deal
so
that he was
crazy.
Doing. So, yeah.
There needs to be more. And I know here in Florida, I know you got to sit with and go to see the governor. There's money, right, for homeschool people.
Absolutely. Through the PEP, the state of Florida, that we have money that. Or not just homeschooling, but the hybrids and also all private schooling as well. Mm-hmm. So parents have that opportunity.
And Governor DeSantis is a supporter of homeschool.
Yes, and freedom of education. That is such a big thing in Florida. We're so great to live in the free state of Florida.
Absolutely. And I'm a big Jay Collins fan, and he would be taking on that as well. Thank you, Chris. We'll
our
be
Lieutenant
right back.
Lieutenant Governor, Jay Collins.
Yes, Jay, our Lieutenant Governor. Great guy. We're sitting here talking to Chris Ice, who's the president of Regina Chaley Academy, and they've got 25 locations. It's a Catholic Hybrid Classical Academy, and he's the author of Walking the Leadership Tightrope. We're going to take a quick minute to visit with our beautiful, amazing sponsors, and we'll be right back in just a few moments. I'm Mary Gardner of The Mary Gardner Show.
Sharpen your voice, refine your brand with The Mary Gardner Show. Let's get back into the studio. Here's Mary.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. It's Mary Gardner of The Mary Gardner Show, and I am talking to Chris Ice today. We're having such a fun conversation. This gets me so excited.
The music gets you dancing.
I do. I'm over here dancing. I love it. It's so fun. And I just get so thrilled about talking about developing people. And I know, for instance, like my son decided, it took a while for him to get through high school. He did get through on the day, the last week. They're like, he's not going to pass. He's like, Mom, don't worry about it. He went back and he did all the work necessary. He did get through it, but he chose a really different path. And so over the last several years, he's worked in restaurants. He's worked as a carpenter. He's done electrical work. He's done masonry. I mean, he's done so many things, and now he's a cook at the Imperial on Park Avenue. He loves it, and he's now studying. He decided he wants to be a pilot, and so it took him a while to figure out what he wanted to do. Some people just take a while, and I'm so proud of him. He's doing so great, and I know that because I have heard and met so many people that do choose to do the homeschool thing, and they're really impacting their children on a holistic way. And you, I know, are on a board at Wyoming Catholic. I think that is one of the most fascinating colleges in the United States. Tell me about Wyoming Catholic and what they do that's so different.
Wyoming Catholic College is a small liberal arts college out in Lander, Wyoming, which is out in the western part. But they have a program that they incorporate within their liberal arts education to where they have three weeks. Freshman orientation is 3 weeks in the wilderness. So they're teaching life skills to their students. Mm-hmm. Again, that holistic viewpoint of the human formation and taking them out into the wild, in the mountains and horseback riding.
Oh,
they have a horsemanship program every freshman.
And this is really a school? It's
a
college?
Yeah, well, they do all the other stuff too, the hard stuff.
Wow.
but they learn how to sing. I mean, they learn how to, when I say, chant or whatever it may be, they read the great books. And again, the Socratic method, when these kids check in, this is a little bit of how would I say? But they check in their phones.
Oh, my gosh.
But voluntary.
Yeah.
But they give them up for the semester. They have access if they need to. Like, they need to call their parents or something. They don't really monitor, but the kids want to.
Wow.
And they disengage from social media. They have access to computers in the library, but they don't have them in their
house.
But again, they go to the wilderness. They come back at the end of the first semester, and they're back in the wilderness for one more week.
Mm.
And then their spring break, they have an option. And I think 100% of the kids went on back out in the wilderness again on these life skills trips.
It's so great.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's all part of the educational process. Mm-hmm. But that's mm-hmm. who we are. That's how we learn. Many people, yeah. like your son, mm-hmm. they're kinesthetic learners. They yeah. don't necessarily learn from a book, mm-hmm. but they get out and they do the skills, yeah. and they learn, and they yeah. master the skill mm-hmm. just by doing things.
Yeah, yeah. by doing so. Things. I just was watching. My brother sent me, my nephew did, he was swimming at Salisbury in Maryland, and he sent me the video of the whole year of all of the swimmers that came together. And when you're in the pool, you're not on your phone. And so it was so genuine to see all of the students and just their joy and their happiness of being together and supporting each other. And that's why I think that sports are so great, because it does take you away. So if I were doing parenting again, I would be like, you're in every sport. You're going to, of course, if you're in Florida, you are going to be on the swim team for sure. I think that's a requirement. But, you know, so I think that the parents of today, our mindset, you know, their mindset is about developing the person. A lot of the kids too, and I think you've got some family members, I'm not sure, but they're doing homesteading. So they're actually going back to the land. They're raising a lot of larger families. Mm-hmm. I know at Ave Maria, you had a lot of families, and also at Regina Chaley, you've got some big families, right?
Right. Regina Chaley is, we do target homeschool families. That's who mm-hmm. we are. We have over 1,000 families with mm-hmm. about 2,600 students mm-hmm. That are in our program. Mm-hmm. And as you said, my oldest daughter, she's now homeschooling her 4 children.
Oh,
and
wow.
So she's really mm-hmm. engaged in that. Mm-hmm. She was homeschooled herself, mm-hmm. But she became a teacher by trade, mm-hmm. got a master's degree, mm-hmm. but chose to homeschool her. So she's very educated. Her husband's the same way. Mm-hmm. Both have their master's and are homeschooling. You know, but because they see the value of family, they see the yeah. value of that. Again, going back to human formation, yeah. but a well-rounded kid. Yeah. And their kids are so social. I mean, they're not. That's, you think about
yeah, because you think they're not going to be, but they're.
But it's becoming more popular today.
I think
people
so.
Are now seeing.
Yeah,
you know, back in the 90s, mm-hmm. you know, it was an isolation type thing, and yeah. people were thinking it was weird. Mm-hmm. Today, mm-hmm. you know, it's a lot more mainstream, especially after mm-hmm. COVID.
Yeah,
people send when, yeah. when their kids went home and they're mm-hmm. learning virtually. Mm-hmm. Parents are going, wait. We can do this ourselves.
Yeah.
We don't need the school to do this.
And we don't want to learn the things that you're forcing us to learn and to share our bathrooms with the kids with male counterparts. And, you know, it just, things have just really gone awry. Yeah. I know also that you visited and went to the inaugural Florida Classical School Conference recently. Tell me about that. That sounds really great.
Yeah, this past weekend they had the conference at Florida International University. Hosted, she's now the former lieutenant governor of the state of Florida, is mm-hmm. now the president of Florida International.
Oh.
Her name escapes me at the moment.
Okay, that's okay.
But long story short, it was a great conference, 400 mm-hmm. people in attendance, classical mm-hmm. schools from all over the country. I was shocked. I thought it was just going to be a small little mm-hmm. gathering. Mm-hmm. But it started by Robert Jackson, who mm-hmm. started the Great Hearts Hybrid Academy and mm-hmm. Classical Academy in mm-hmm. Texas. Mm-hmm. He now lives in Phoenix, but he started this Florida mm-hmm. Classical Schools Conference. And it's all about classical education,
wow.
you know, and how to focus on how to do it correctly and encourage people. This is, many schools are going toward these curriculums because, again, you know, when's a good time to read a classic mm-hmm. book? Always.
That's really good. So, yeah. I love
that. You can always read, you know, Shakespeare and on and on. So.
That is so impressive when you see students that have done that and they know about the Iliad and the Odyssey and, you know, all these amazing classics. That's so
great.
And
can engage in political discussions as well, but articulate what truth is and what it means to be, you know, a virtuous person. They can distinguish that.
Yes.
They don't get into a lot of that. You know, rhetoric and all that. They can see.
Yeah, social identity.
Right.
Social identity politics.
We're talking about it, right?
Yeah.
We're having that conversation. Mm-hmm. Let's have a discussion. We're not going to be critical. We're going to have a good Socratic discussion about
that's,
a topic.
That is the truth. Yeah. And it is putting your emphasis and your meaning elsewhere besides, you know, that identity politics is just out of control.
They're going to have their next conference here in Orlando, actually, November 17th.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so.
Okay.
Site to be determined, but it's here.
So. Oh, I love that. That's so great. Was the vibe really positive there?
Yeah, very positive.
Aww.
Very uplifting.
I love it. Well, we're going to take a quick little break because we have a little section called You Rock.
You rock, you rock, you rock.
So, Chris.
Rock.
I started the U-Rock section because my brother who passed always was the biggest encourager. He had scoliosis and he was disabled, but the thing he had still was the ability to encourage. And he always told me, Mary, you rock, and always be happy. And so I just appreciated that so much about him that I've dedicated this to him. And so I wanted to I have a person that I want to say rocks, and then I'm going to ask you who you rock, who do you like? So I want to tell you that you're the person that I say rocks because I admire you for your leadership and your steadiness, your clarity, your commitment to forming others and not just leading institutions. That kind of leadership matters right now. So I just want to say you're making an impact. We're grateful for it. You and I are personal friends and work colleagues, and I just really admire you so much. So Chris Ice, you rock. All right, your turn.
Well, thank you, Rachel. Naturally, I would say right back, my beautiful girlfriend sitting across the desk from me, you rock, but let's move on beyond that.
Now the truth is out. He's my boyfriend.
Yes. After my late wife passed in 2020, my kids really went through a lot. We're in the middle of COVID, and, their mom passes away. We're in a strange town, and Avi Maria, and they had to navigate a lot of things. But ultimately, my kids, they all worked through it, all seven of them, but especially even my two youngest daughters. And we moved to Orlando area, but my two youngest daughters, one is now at... just graduating from Tallahassee State. She's been accepted into the University of Central Florida.
Go to Rez.
Rosen School of Hospitality. she's doing fantastic.
She's amazing.
And Julia is a junior at Bishop Moore. So for all of my kids, especially the two youngest girls, I just want to say, you rock, girls. You're awesome.
Ladies, you rock. That's from both of us. I think you're both incredible. I love you both. So this has been so fun. Chris, thank you for being with me today. It's an honor to have you here. It's an honor to have you in my life. I really appreciate it. I adore you. And today has been a really powerful conversation, I think, for parents and families. And here's what really stands out to me, that leadership is not about having all the answers. It's really about having the presence to stand firm when others can't. It's about choosing clarity over chaos and conviction over confusion and discipline over reaction. In a world that pulls you into the noise, the real leaders are the ones who rise above it. They don't just lead organizations, they shape people. And whether you are leading a company, a family, or simply your own life, you are on that leadership tightrope every single day. The question is, how are you going to walk it? Chris, take us out with your last bit of advice for our listeners today.
I'd say stay focused on your faith. Amen. When times are rough, God is your guide. Christ is your center. Mm-hmm. And when you have that as your focus, everything else seems to be less chaotic.
Amen.
And so when you're in a crisis, really turn to God. Don't try to rely on yourself, and he'll lead you through all the troubles and challenges.
Oh, that's beautiful. Thank you for sharing. I've seen you do that. You've been such a leader to so many of us, and I appreciate your steadfastness. So everybody, thank you so much for joining us today on The Mary Gardner Show. And we want you to go out and lead and make an impact, live your purpose. And if you need some help, please visit me at marygardner.com. And if you want some, just to jump on Zoom together or a phone call, shoot me an email at mary@marygardner.com. My goal is to be in touch, to engage with our audience, and to make sure that every single person is touched and is happy and is following their truth. Thank you all. I appreciate you being here today, and we will see you next time. God bless.